It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. During the first week of the new Trump administration, the Department of Homeland Security rescinded a policy that provided limited protections from immigration enforcement for certain areas like schools, hospitals, and churches.
In response, a group of faith leaders from Wisconsin issued an open letter calling on elected officials to restore the sensitive locations policy, allowing immigrants to participate in local civic life without the risk of immigration enforcement raids.
The Wisconsin Council of Churches joined more than two dozen other Christian and Jewish religious groups in a lawsuit against the Trump administration over this policy change.
Bishop Ann Edison Albright is based in Appleton and serves as Bishop of the East Central Synod of Wisconsin for the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. She recently signed that open letter from bishops in Wisconsin. And Sergio Gonzalez is Assistant Professor of History at Marquette University. Sergio, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Bishop Ann, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Bishop Ann, let's start with you and this open letter that you signed on to with other faith leaders from the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. What message were you hoping to send with that letter?
A really clear message that as people of faith, as leaders of faith, it's very important to us that we continue to be safe spaces for all of our neighbors, regardless of immigration status.
How does the rescinding of churches having this sensitive area status affect the work you do? Not just, the once a week church services, but the work you do all week long.
You're absolutely right that it's not just a Sunday morning thing. Mm-hmm. Our congregations are centers for civic life and incredibly important. I mean, if you think about all of the things that happen at congregations, so health fairs where people are going to get their blood pressure checked. Our congregations are warming centers. They're places where Alcoholic Anonymous and NA meetings meet. These are places where basic human life things happen, and it's inhumane for them to not be safe spaces for everyone.
And Sergio, you've been following this story of how immigrants from Mexico and elsewhere interact with faith communities here in Wisconsin through much of your career. What do you see in this policy change from this policy going back to a 2011 memo?
I think one of the things we have to keep in mind was what's happening today in 2025 is part of a larger continuum. There has been a long history of churches really interacting with the state and trying to figure out what relationship they're going to have as it pertains to both undocumented immigration, but more importantly, what protections they can offer undocumented immigrants. So for us, I think the most important touchstone we should be looking at is the 1980s, when churches and synagogues here in Wisconsin were having the absolute same debates in the midst of the sanctuary movement.
The argument from the Trump administration and supporters is churches aren't a law-free zone, right? It's not a magical get-out-of-law enforcement-free card to set foot inside a place of worship. Why should this be a special space?
Yeah, I think since that original memo under the Obama administration, there's a recognition that are certain locations in our society that we should look at as being locations where we can feel comfortable, where our immigration status should not bar us, whether that's a school, whether that's a hospital, and whether that's a church. But the thing I'll point out is in the 1980s, when churches and synagogues declared themselves sanctuaries for undocumented immigrants here in the United States, they didn't have the protection of this memo, right? They understood in their bones that a sacred space should remain separate from these secular spaces, and specifically from that police enforcement power.
Bishop Ann, I don't know if ICE agents have been showing up at places of worship in Wisconsin as of yet. Are you and your colleagues talking about what to do if and when that happens?
We absolutely are. And a wonderful resource for us in that is the Wisconsin Council of Churches. They had an online meeting recently with the ACLU helping congregations. They serve 23 denominations, but even more than that around the state, giving that kind of know your rights and how can we prepare together information.
And the Wisconsin Council on Churches did join in one of a couple of lawsuits going on now over this policy. As far as I could tell, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America has not directly signed on to a lawsuit, but correct me if I'm wrong, please.
Not as the national version of our denomination, because of the way our polity works. Mm-hmm. We're not able to do it that way. But certainly through Wisconsin Council of Churches, through Wisdom, individual congregations are able to do that and are taking part in the lawsuit that way.
Now, again, the knock on the door hasn't come yet. Do you and your colleagues see just that this policy change has affected your congregants and the people who use the other services that your churches provide?
Yeah, the change happened right away. I mean, the the day after the news broke, we had congregations getting in touch with us because of, I don't want to get too specific, but because of the way that it was impacting people in their communities, people in their congregations who were no longer feeling safe to be able to come and receive the services that they receive in their congregations.
Now, Sergio, you mentioned the 1980s and the asylum policies then. Can you compare what's happening in 2025 to that? What similarities do you see? What are some of the differences?
Well, I think the one thing I'll kind of highlight here again is that churches and synagogues in the 1980s didn't wait for the benediction of the federal government to do the work they felt was necessary, which is to open their places as locations of safe harbor for undocumented immigrants who had been denied asylum in the United States. And the other thing important to note is that while today we're having these hypothetical conversations of what happens when ICE knocks on the door, this happened in the 1980s. The federal government, through the Federal Bureau of Investigation and Immigration Naturalization Services, was sending agents secretively into church spaces, into Bible studies, into the pews where they were observing what was happening in the sanctuary movement. They use all this information to eventually actually bring people to trial. So the very church leaders who were doing this work of mercy, right, doing this everyday labor of fellowship, were eventually brought and were found guilty of breaking the law. But that did not stop churches and synagogues from doing the work.
Is that something you see faith leaders being willing to do, Bishop Ann, in 2025, run that risk of potentially being charged if for not cooperating with Immigration and Customs Enforcement?
Yes, absolutely. That history from the 1980s, but also just going back, I mean, sanctuary has been part of just an essential part of what it means to be a faith community for a very, very long time. And this is core to who we are as people of faith. So we're going to keep being ourselves. We are going to keep doing the ministry, and that might get us in trouble. We're going to do our best not to make vulnerable people more vulnerable by what we do, and so we want to be smart about it. But yes, this is really, really important to us.
We are talking about places of worship in Wisconsin with Ann Edison Albright, Bishop of the East Central Synod of Wisconsin for the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and Sergio Gonzalez, Assistant Professor of History at Marquette University. Bishop Ann, can you talk about some of the faith tenets that you see in Christianity that say, hey, yes, as a faith leader, you should be doing this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it shows up in Scripture more than just about anything else. I mean, you're talking about what Christians consider the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament. This idea of you were once a stranger in Egypt, so you know, welcome the stranger, and care for the alien, the orphan, and the widow. It comes up a lot. It's very central to who we are. It's something that we have in common with people of the Jewish faith, with Muslims. It's very basic to us and to our understanding of like a radical hospitality and care for people.
And Sergio, can you talk a little more about the history of how that's played out here in Wisconsin with, as you say in your books, welcoming in sometimes a positive way, sometimes a negative way, people from Mexico and Central America? How is that concept of Christian theology played out here?
Yeah, I think the story of the 20th century is a story of very convoluted forms of hospitality. There have been at times where communities of faith have offered a full-throated form of hospitality, as the bishop says here, radical hospitality, that really reaches at the root of what it means to welcome someone. We also have instances across the 20th century, of course, where Latino immigrants have been seen only as laborers. Their hospitality has been contingent on what they can contribute to a society, whether that's their work, or whether that's their failed to a faith. And so what we're seeing today are really a continuation of those conversations. In the 1980s, Wisconsin was one of the most important locations in the sanctuary movement. Milwaukee had the first Black, Latino, and Jewish houses of worship that opened up their houses as places of safe harbor for Central Americans. And so what's going to happen over the next few years is really just another part of that larger story.
And you've talked about going back even before the 1980s, we're talking about 100 plus years of history. And we forget that sometimes every 10 or 20 years now we have a new Latino immigrant population in Wisconsin that we didn't really know about.
Yeah, I think the work of the historian is to not be continually confounded by our inability to remember that past, because that's exactly right. We could go back to the arrival of the first Latino immigrants in the 1880s through the 1920s, the repatriation drives of the Great Depression, where hundreds of thousands of Mexican and ethnic Mexicans across the United States were deported from this country, right? Deportation raids in the 70s. Unfortunately, we kind of have these similar conversations and the resolution actions often result in pain for those affected communities and the people who call them neighbors as well.
Bishop Ann, talk a little more about the concept of sanctuary as it applies to the church and then, of course, the immigrant populations we're talking about.
Yeah, and certainly having that really that historical view that goes way, way back is very helpful. In some estimations, sanctuary goes all the way back to Greek and Roman temples. And so this practice of places of worship being places where you can go if you're in trouble and find a safe space, that is a very, very old concept. And it is, I mean, it's been in development, and in different times and places it looks different. But there is a thread and a through line that connects all of those different ways of doing sanctuary.
Now, Sergio, the response to these lawsuits from the Trump administration has been along the lines of, we could have potentially dangerous people in a church setting. We shouldn't have these rules that prevent us from going after them. I'm looking at the 2011 original memo here, and there are specific exceptions to this policy saying, hey, it's okay to go in if there is a specific national security or terrorism matter, imminent risk of death, violence, or physical harm, immediate arrest of pursuit of a dangerous felon. And of course, you could get, even without those, you could get approval. So there was room for ICE to do these enforcement actions at churches under those conditions I just laid out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think it's part of the larger, conversation we're having about the rhetoric we used to talk about immigration writ large in this country. And unfortunately, there's a growing strain in this nation that has become dominant, which is to look at all immigrants as a potential threat and a potential criminal activity within their spaces. I think the important thing to note, I'll jump off the bishop's point here about sanctuary. People often think of sanctuary as a criminal space, right? A place where criminals go to hide. But sanctuary is often understood as a place where someone goes until justice can be done, right? A fear that if they step outside of that sanctuary space, there's going to be some extra legal justice executed upon them, whether that's being detained and deported without due process, or whether that's going to be, snuck away into the night and sent off to Guantanamo. I mean, these are not theoreticals that we're talking about today. These are things that are happening all around us.
That's so on point. And if you think about what was going on with sanctuary in the 80s, that was one of the main legal defenses for that movement at the time, is that the government itself was breaking its own laws when it came to asylum and when it came to refugees. And so just because something is legal doesn't mean that it's just. And so in a lot of cases, sanctuary is offering that space because there is an unjust law, or because the law is being enforced unjustly.
And Sergio, there's a lot of, a bleed over from different categories of immigration. People might talk generally about illegal immigrants or illegal aliens in some phrases. Often, as I understand recent immigration, it's people looking to apply for asylum, not having completed that process yet, so having no legal status in the United States. Is that an important distinction to make?
It's extremely important. I think, I always tell people that beyond financial law, immigration law is the most complicated legal system that we have in this country. And I'm a scholar of immigration, and I still barely understand this really complex field. And I think on top of it, you have sectors of our polity today that are trying to question the very concept of some of the legal categories that we hold to be true. We have members of our White House today who are completely disabusing this notion of temporary protected status as being a legitimate form of protection in this country. And so the reality is that you could be considered legal one day, and the next day the White House passes an executive order that makes you undocumented in this country. And the question then becomes, what is your recourse? What are you supposed to do? Houses of worship then represent that in-between space where you can find a place of safe harbor until justice can be meted out.
Bishop Ann, Vice President J.D. Vance has recently made the case that Christian compassion can go to all people, but citing St. Augustine, he says there's sort of a triage order. Let's use that compassion for those in our families, in our communities already. People, unfortunately, he might say, from other countries would be further down that list, lower priorities.
Yeah. I don't think that's an understanding of Augustine that Vice President Vance and I share. you know, my understanding of what Augustine was saying there is that it's in human nature to start close to home that way, but that the love of Christ pushes us outward beyond what our boundaries would normally be. And certainly, if we spend any time with Jesus Christ in the Bible, Jesus is always pushing us out beyond those boundaries. Jesus is saying things like, "Who are my mother and my brother?" Right? These people are my siblings. This is my mother. You know, trying to move us beyond just caring about our immediate families and thinking about that family as being all of us, the whole world. You know, who's my neighbor? All these folks.
And Sergio, over American history, going back way before the 80s, attitudes toward immigrants have waxed and waned. Reactions against, maybe more support for. Are we just on part of an ongoing cycle, or do you see something different now?
There are certainly flashpoints that we're seeing right now that we can add to the register that seem new. But unfortunately, in the way that we think of this nation as a nation of immigrants, it's also a nation of nativists. And this has always been the push-pull strain of our country, which is trying to define the boundaries of national belonging. Who gets to be an American? What are the parameters of belonging, whether that's citizenship or otherwise? And, you know, we could point to so many different chapters in our nation's history where we have seen these tension points, whether it's in the 1850s and the Know Nothing Party, the 1920s and the passage of restrictive immigration laws, or today where we're again kind of seeing another flashpoint. I think it's too early to tell whether there's something exceptional about what's happening right now. What we're going to see, I think, is not only the response from those who seek to limit who gets to see themselves as an American, but also the rise of Americans who feel like there can be a capacious understanding of who can be our neighbor and who can belong here.
Bishop Ann, as we wrap up, many denominations are getting involved in sanctuary and getting involved in lawsuits against this change in policy. Many denominations are not. What would you say to your colleagues in faith organizations who have not embraced this concept?
I mean, I would say I would probably speak to the people of those denominations and ask them have conversations with their pastor, with their priest, with their faith leader, and talk about what does it mean? What does it mean to me? Right? Because I think a lot of us actually have, if we put aside the fear that's been pushed in the media against immigrants, a lot of us have experience with welcoming neighbors, with helping with refugee resettlement. That's a big thing in Wisconsin, and that's been incredibly meaningful and positive for so many people in Wisconsin. So if congregations and people in congregations can have conversations about that, and how is it that we live out our faith? How do we care for our neighbors right now? And how do we make sure that all of our neighbors have access to the resources of our congregations that are so vital for life?
And we'll leave it there. Bishop Ann, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Sergio, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking about the history of sanctuary for immigrants in Wisconsin with Ann Edison Albright, Bishop of the East Central Synod of Wisconsin for the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and Sergio Gonzalez, Assistant Professor of History at Marquette University. Bishop Ann recently joined other bishops in signing a letter asking elected officials to restore the sensitive area policy, protecting churches in most cases from ICE raids. And the Wisconsin Council of Churches recently joined a lawsuit against the Trump administration over that change in policy.
Coming up, a new book tells the story of Val Phillips and her campaign for housing equality in Milwaukee and her trailblazing career as the first Black woman to achieve a long list of milestones in Wisconsin.
Every time you turn around, she is the first something, and she could only do that because it hadn't been tried before.
That's just ahead on Wisconsin Today.